keep our systems open. We build systems that are open, that don't, nobody wants mainframes anymore. So how do we enable you to adopt open standards into your cloud environment, how you go forward?
Thanks. Let's do Vic.
Hi, I'm the CTO of a small software company called Kavada. And Kavada builds software that protects data at the, rather, information at the data level. So our view is that regardless of what security controls you have, your information is still vulnerable, so you have to protect the information itself. So we do a combination of encryption and persisting access controls. So to understand the technology, think in terms of, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Either one.
Thank you. Is this on? Okay.
Yep.
Note to self, push button.
battery, I think.
Yeah. So think smart, smart objects. So if you convert your information into a some object that can be persisted in the world, every copy will be protected the same way. And we think that this is actually a growing trend in the industry.
Welcome. Drew, we haven't heard from you today, so just to refresh us.
Good afternoon. Drew Dietrich. I'm with Oracle. We're the world's second largest software company. And my focus has been in delivering private cloud solutions to our customers. We have over 500 customers in the space today. Actually, Oracle has been in the cloud business for 14 years. In the private cloud, taking software licenses, Oracle software licenses from their customers and managing them in the data centers that Oracle has built from the ground up. So this is completely organic, which is, I know, is unusual for Oracle. We like to buy a lot of companies, but in this case, the services that we're providing were built out of product development to support our customers and to understand how best to serve our customers and to squeeze all the value out of the applications that we sell to them. So, glad to be here.
Welcome. So let's start down here with Blake on this first question. We've heard a lot over the last couple of days, and let's just try to distill it down to one last piece of advice to folks in the government or the healthcare sector that are evaluating moving to the cloud. What one piece of advice in terms of what should they do first as they make that move?
Okay, so I'm taking a security view of the world. So I would say the main piece of advice is to design it in the first place instead of bolting it on at the end. The controls that you've used in the past are not going to work as well in the cloud.
Thank you. Michael?
Well, I'd talk about, how many of you want to buy mainframe? None, hopefully. How many of you want to go to the cloud forever? Because a lot of the early adopters of the cloud, they went to a certain cloud provider. They wrote applications or adapted applications that worked with those APIs, and they were there forever. Because for them to be able to bring that application back in-house would require a total rewrite of the system. So as you think about going out to cloud, what cloud OS do you want to utilize to do that? What hypervisors are you familiar with? Are you comfortable with? And make sure that you're going to a cloud that enables you to, if you need, to move that application to another cloud provider without rewrite or bring it back in-house.
Good one. Chris?
Yeah, I think the cloud, before you move to the cloud, you understand why you're going to the cloud, right? So what are the benefits you're looking for if it's to not build out a data center which costs $500 million, then that's probably a good idea. If it's just because it's cool technology and you want to be cutting edge, then that may not be the best approach. But I think to do the hard work and planning up front internally, make sure everybody on the entire staff is involved and understands what you're doing, and then on an application by application basis, assessing where the main benefits would come from, that would be my suggestion.
Vic?
Well, I largely agree with what's said. I just have trouble understanding the mainframe comments. We can talk about that later. It all kind of looks the same. I think that the key point for me is that I don't want to abdicate control over my information. And to do that, there are certain responsibilities that remain with me when I use anybody's service or software or solutions. And secondly, I also have a responsibility to validate using third-party or other means vendors' claims. Claims sound great, marketing sounds great, but the question is what's going to happen in reality when something bad happens in infrastructure and application. What will the vendor actually do, and what are your expectations? Is it consistent with your expectation for what will happen?
True.
Great, thanks. So my recommendation, if you're going to evaluate moving to the cloud, is obviously to take a look at, is your vendor, and I'm talking from the perspective of mission critical applications being moved into the cloud, is your vendor a true, can they offer a true single point of accountability? Do they have, you know, comprehensive SLAs for that application performance or business processes? Will you, the customer, have complete visibility into the amount of storage you're using, into the control of change, into your availability, and all the metrics that you would normally have if you were running that application yourself in your own on-premise environment? And then probably the most important piece of advice I would provide is risk mitigation, especially during the implementation, but definitely, and this is something I really haven't heard that much of over the past day and a half, is risk mitigation after you've gone live in that cloud environment. What steps will your vendor take to make sure that no problems happen during that run and maintain of that mission critical application that they're running for you? That's, I think, a critical component. And as a customer, you need to really interrogate that vendor on their ability to mitigate risk.
Thank you. So let's move from sort of the pre-migration evaluation stage to actually in it. And what would you say is the one key to successful deployment? Is it having a really well-written SLA, or is it some other consideration? Let's start with Michael on this one.
Well, I mean, from our perspective, it's really you have to have the agreement of the business. If IT just goes to the cloud on their own and forgets about the business, it'll work for IT, it'll never work for the business. So going to the cloud really requires an upfront agreement with the business of how those applications, how those on-ramps, how DevOps is going to use the cloud, and getting that agreement and buy-in upfront.
Good. Chris?
Yeah, so what I'm seeing is a lot of more peer-to-peer clouds, right? So even IDC is saying this, that a lot of folks within your same organizations or same industry are actually leveraging their data centers, and they're turning them from, you know, cost centers into profit centers. So that may be some place to look for successful implementation, that somebody in your peer structure has already done it, and then they're actually may be able to sell you services. I'm seeing this especially in hospitals, where they're selling services to their inpatient physicians for HIPAA compliance, where all the patient data is stored locally in the hospital as their cloud, and they're selling that as a service to the patient. So that's a very successful model that they're using. It helps the doctors, it helps the hospitals, and it becomes an easy thing to deploy.
Victor?
I think it's interesting, yeah. The So I go back to the comment that both you and I made about, you know, what you do when something bad happens, or the risk, the whole world around risk. And I think that as you make the transition into operation and so forth, one of the things that is valuable is to leverage other people's experience. You wouldn't think about traveling to a foreign country without looking at some information from other travelers, right, a travel guide or something like that. And I think that the challenge that we have in moving in technology is that there are a lot of voices, but it's very difficult for somebody who has no background or insufficient background to really discern what the value of the different voices is and what pieces are truly valuable. So I think that there is a real need to leverage really qualified travel agents in this space, right, in this migration.
Good point.
Sure.
Understanding that there's government possible employees here, I'll try and sugarcoat this as much as possible. So I would recommend that we learn from some of the mistakes that we've seen in the press recently about, you know, healthcare.gov. And I think one of the key mistakes that happened there is not truly understanding the roles and responsibilities of the implementer, of the vendor, and of government. And those roles and responsibilities, as you, you know, SLAs are obviously very important, but writing into the contract the specific roles and responsibilities of all the people that are involved are going to make that project that going from, you know, start to go live to, you know, renewal, that whole process as seamless and as smooth as possible. And that's critical if you're going to want to have sleep at night. So,
good points. Last word from Blake.
In fact, I'd echo that. Certainly on the security side, it's about that shared responsibility model and knowing who owns what across each of the different pieces. And, you know, the great thing about the cloud, and we're seeing it all the time now, is from a security vendor, you know, often bolted on at the end, a lot of testing and evaluation was done very unit-like. So can you protect against this? Can you protect against that? Now we're seeing customers, they can ramp up to 1,000 over a test case. They can throw production data at it, and they can see how it performs and then ask us to prove that we have the audit trail, that it fit with their incident response processes, that it could fit with their compliance responsibilities. And that's one way to prove out a shared model where you have different responsibilities across different groups within the organization or even with third parties.
Thank you. Next question, start with Chris on this one. So now we've gone from pre to during, to measure success. How, did it work or didn't it work or how well did it work? Is that just a technical calculus, like how much does it cost to store so many gigs of data now in the cloud versus anywhere? Or, you know, what would your advice be about how to measure success? What metrics to use?
Ooh, I'll give you the consultant answer. It depends. All right.
Give us a better answer.
Yeah. So it depends on what the criteria was to move to the cloud in the first place, right?
Yeah,
so,
sure.
You know, the measurement criteria could be financial. It could be from a security standpoint. What I'm seeing is a lot of the cloud providers are better at security than a lot of the IT shops. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then maybe if that was one of the metrics, then you're probably going to be successful doing that. Not only that, you don't have to keep your staff trained because the other guys are doing it for you. So if that provides some financial benefits in training and people costs and skill sets and whatnot. So again, it really depends on what the metrics were that you're beginning. And I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
I think that was a great point. Yeah. I think that the leverage that cloud service providers have in terms of the trained expertise that sees a lot more in terms of threats and has learned to respond to it exceeds the capacity of almost all organizations to rise up to that level. I think it's a very important point. I think that it allows the organization to focus on its core business versus on IT and all these esoteric areas, including security, which aren't part of its core business, but which it needs to have expertise in if it does it itself.
Unless it's the CIA or NSA.
So I think that a couple of other points on that. I think that you know, today's benchmark success grade of an A is tomorrow's passing grade, right? So I think there's a story of continuing change, and it's very rapid. I think we've seen the pace of technology over the last several years, and today's dominant player in the cloud space is, you know, you talked earlier about being able to move your stuff off of the platform and so forth. I think it's very important to kind of weigh both sides of the coin. Yeah. On the one hand, you want to use the innovation that dominant players bring to the market, like Amazon, right? There's no question about it. On the other side of the coin, you want to continue to innovate, and you don't want to be locked into the, you know, these dominant positions.
Okay. Drew?
Stole my thunder.
I read your notes.
Thanks. Yeah, so I kind of feel like it's almost like, you know, entering into a contract with a cable TV provider. Or Fios, for instance, where, you know, you get this great deal and then 3 months into it, you start seeing advertisements for better deals. Why can't I get those better deals? So that's my analogy for innovation. So as a vendor, I think, and just kind of going off what was just said, as a vendor, you want to be the benefactor of this change, these improvements in technology that lead to the service provider innovating around their services. You want to be able to measure over a 12-month period, hey, what didn't I have 12 months ago that the vendor is providing to me today just as part of the service, no additional charge, that's making my life a lot easier? That's an important measurement that I think really will drive a partnership relationship with a vendor instead of a vendor-customer relationship.
Okay, Blake?
I'm just trying to compute this question in the security context. I mean, I think we've touched on a few things, testing at scale, testing across vendors. I think the other thing is that you just brought up was really about lock-in, right? If you design a system that allows you to move, then they have to treat you well as the innovation improves. I think about it with my cable service at home, right? They always give a good deal to the new customer, but the person that's been on the system and their customer for years tends to get ripped off. If there's a low switching barrier or you're not locked in, then you will continue to get those benefits, or they'll continue to keep you happy. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important.
That's important. Last word from Mike.
And I also, when we think about going to the cloud, a lot of times we think about today. And what I challenge a lot of CIOs about is, where do you want to be 5 years from now? Gartner came out with a study that by 2017, marketing will control more IT budget than IT. Why is that? Well, marketing doesn't care about cost per se, and they don't care about security per se. They care about a relationship with the customer, understanding their customer, and how they can leverage that relationship and that understanding into profitability. So they're going to the cloud with or without IT to gain competitive advantage. And that's going to be key, is as we think about, you know, how do we want to develop and stand up our IT infrastructure for 5 years from now, it has to be around agility. It can't be necessarily around cost. IT thinks about cost, the other departments don't. So it's just something to think about as we go forward.
Excellent point. Let's start with Victor. This will be our, we'll do this for government and military, and then we'll do the same question for healthcare and life sciences. But what's your final consideration, either from the three areas we've talked about so far or something we haven't covered? The final piece of advice for government and military as a critical success factor when they go to the cloud?
I think you have to inoculate yourself against the loss of your information and your ability to access your systems. And in the information, on the information side, inoculation means protect the data. And protecting data doesn't mean just encrypt it. It means really controlling who should have access, being able to specify under what circumstances, because things change, right? Mm-hmm. If there's a fire, we get to pull the fire alarm. That's a break glass moment. Whatever rules there were, you break the glass to do it, and you need that in the information sphere as well. So the fact that you don't have privilege or clearance for a certain kind of information, we need to be able to break the glass on giving you that under the right circumstances. So in terms of being able to specify all that and to express it in a series of rules that systems enforce, you need the right kind of tools. And I think that in the government and
most
important.
Absolutely. Drew, what's your perspective?
From a public sector perspective, which is not my area of expertise, so I've asked some help on this. They've said, my peers have said that, you know, providing a customization framework such that can add public sector customizations into that application within the cloud is absolutely necessary. And ensuring that the vendor supports standards like web services, FIPS 140, SFTP, et cetera, are critical for the public sector.
That's a good one. Blake?
I think if I were to sum it up in a word across the different spaces that are represented here, it's about fit. I mean, there's such a vast difference between the types of applications that these different groups run. You need systems that fit from, security systems that fit from an agility perspective. You need systems that fit from a utility perspective and an elasticity perspective. And your data correlation from a security perspective is going to change dramatically as you go to the cloud, when things will only exist for 15 minutes before they're taken down.
Okay. Michael?
I'm actually going to give an example of a customer of ours, county county customer, runs an IT shop, and instead of just building out this infrastructure that works for them, they actually built out a cloud infrastructure, whereas they could sell their services to other counties within the state.
Beautiful.
To be able to utilize. So instead of all of them just building their own, now they've built a model, and it's not really a for-profit per se, it's more of a charge-back-at-cost model. But utilizing things of that nature and really thinking, I hate to say outside the box, but thinking of that shared model of how they can leverage that with other counties.
Excellent point.
That's an excellent point. I've seen that. Actually, IDC is saying that. Peer-to-peer sharing of cloud infrastructure is going to be the next big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look in the, especially in the private sector, they're really ramping up to do that. But I think key for from a military standpoint especially is innovation, right? So you don't want to pick a vendor or a provider that is just going to stagnate in their approach. I mean, you need to be able to be on the cutting edge. I think there was a recent example where we're using geospatial satellites to understand where we are geographically, yeah. But now there's a new, some English firm came up with a new thing. You don't even need satellites, and it knows exactly where you are based on atomic, it's some weird science, but it's pretty cool. And those guys are innovating. I think that would be kind of unique, for the military, so in case somebody takes out the satellites, you still can find out where you are, right? So I think innovation and no stagnation is key.
All good answers. Let's do the same now for healthcare. I'll start with Drew. One last consideration maybe we haven't hit on before, or the
sure.
most important.
Yeah, so obviously we believe that IT folks within healthcare are a great source of innovation. We heard yesterday from my colleagues from Dell that they're doing great work with children's cancer through genomics and exposing the data and bringing data together from various locations to help solve the issue of cancer. Oracle has similar things going on with MD Anderson Hospital. So there's a lot of innovation that IT delivers that really help drive patient health and clinical success. And that's really where I think the healthcare industry is going and how we can work with you, the cloud provider, to drive that in. To drive that innovation and to be much more valuable to the overall process of delivering great care.
Blake?
I'm just thinking, so when I look at how we're working with different folks in the healthcare industry, the three critical things that we hear from them all the time are patient safety, quality of care, and cost management. And certainly cloud provides a platform that allows them to improve mm-hmm. a lot of the tools and the systems and the applications that they use to deliver those in a way that's very cost efficient. So one of their barriers, of course, is the whole concept of breaks and security. So being able to provide that in a secure way has been very, very important to them.
Okay.
And I'd put out a word of caution. I mean, in the past 6 months, we've seen three major cloud providers go under, and that's impacted our customers. So as you start to look at who are those public cloud providers you're going to work with, you really truly need to understand what is their bottom line. One of our customers going with a cloud provider went out of business, said you have 2 weeks to get your data. Well, they had thousands of customers trying to come in and get their storage over a 2 week period. Can you imagine what that looked like? So word of caution, the cloud provider you choose as a public cloud provider does matter.
Chris?
I think what I'm seeing in the healthcare space is I'm working with a couple of hospitals where they're sharing their information, right? They're trying to take all the, DICOM is a standard, but everybody has a different version of it, right? So it's even hard to, tie those standards together. But what they're trying to do is affect change by sharing all of the patient data that they can to make sure treatments are more mm-hmm. effective, right? So the more data points you have and the more information you have, the easier that becomes, and you can use analytics on it to actually make healthcare better. Mm-hmm. So I think the ability to share securely information and the ability to actually have a community type cloud is important in that space.
Vic, anything we haven't left out?
I think that both in the government space and in the healthcare space, you have very conservative of views about IT, despite the adoption of new technologies. In the healthcare space, one of the problems we have is that everybody wants to own your data, the patient's data, right? Nobody wants to make the patient own their data because there's value in the data, right? So I think that this is a big issue, and it's I would like to see some solutions that were patient-centric mm-hmm. versus you know, the other way, the way they are today. That's
okay. Thank you. You guys have been real patient. Anybody awake still? let's see if you have anything you'd like to ask, and I've got a couple more questions if you don't. But in the back. That's a fair question.
Oh, so you want me to be an energy expert now, right?
Yeah.
So
I'm
trying to appreciate that. So the government has an initiative to collapse data centers today, right? So the beautiful thing about cloud and virtualization, it enables you to take physical infrastructure and collapse it down. So the hardest part about anybody's IT is power, right, and floor space, right? Those are the big things that drive cost. It's not just the physical part. And then Gartner says, from an operational perspective, you're spending $4 managing the infrastructure that you spend $1 on, right? So I think the ability to leverage the technology and innovation to collapse everything and reduce the power requirements are going to be beneficial. What you see in the old big iron that was out there, that's you need a nuclear power plant to run somebody's data center. Now, you know, my goal is to see that one little black box in the middle of the day. I think it was an IBM ad, right, that they had, and that just took so much power. So the ability to consolidate, and that's where they're going, is key, and then that'll ultimately reduce the power requirements to actually do it.
Are there existing technologies right now that could be compressed into a much smaller space and it's just not too pricey?
Well, I think there was a comment just on one of the panels that were here yesterday talking about a service provider or a cloud provider who aren't using power and cooling in the traditional sense. They're actually burying the equipment in oil, and they can put 33 kilowatts per rack or something like that. So again, further consolidation. So they're the only ones doing it so far. I think that's driven by a Japanese company, but there may be something to that in the near future.
Interesting.
They're doing that because the amount of power that's required to get the compute utility out of it
absolutely
is producing so much heat.
Right.
And there's really no getting around it. They're just tricks in terms of dissipating mm-hmm. the heat. But in terms of providing the power, there's some of the leading data centers in the country are in Las Vegas, outside Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't believe it because Las Vegas is hot as hell in summer, right? But it turns out that it's only really that hot for 3 months out of the year. Mm-hmm. The rest of the time, they can exchange the air with the ambient mm-hmm. air outside and just add more humidity to it so it doesn't right. blow up from static charges, right? Right.
Right. Yeah. Only during the day.
Most of the hardware vendors are very vested in how can we get our computers to run at much higher temperatures? Mm-hmm. And the example you have out in Vegas, you have a lot of data centers are going out there, and it's evaporative cooling. There's no AC running to it, it's all evaporative cooling. Same with storage. How do we greater densities on storage down to the atom level to be able to store this stuff? Because there's not gonna be enough sand in the world to produce enough silicone to store all this data in so many years. So how do we get greater and greater densities with what we have?
We went through a similar transition. We went from CRTs to flat screens, okay. which consume a fraction of the power.
Yep.
And we're seeing the same transition between hard disk drives and solid state disk drives consume a fraction of the power.
In virtualization, I mean, whereas we were 12% utilization on a good day, virtualization has enabled us to get 80% utilization.
Right, right.
Now, companies still are only about 60% virtualized, according to Gartner, so there's a lot of growth that we can do around that as well.
Yeah, empty computers spinning, waiting yep. for work to come in versus putting additional work on them because they're virtualized.
Yep. And that's the value of solid state now, is you don't have to have spinning disk anymore. Solid state, it's gotten to the point where it's almost as cheap as disk, And the density that you can put on it almost makes it even cheaper than this.
There's another interesting point here, and that's that every server has a power supply in it. And what that power supply does is it converts AC, either 240 or 120, into DC. And so in every computer, there's a power supply. So you're going through that process in every computer. Wouldn't it be more efficient to take that out of these inefficient power supplies and put it into the data center and deliver DC directly? The reason it's not done is because it'll kill people who work on them, right? So, I mean, there's your trade-off.
In Texas, it would work. Any other question besides, we could go for a while then. Right here. Very good question.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I mean, from my perspective, I actually ran into this with a local commercial company up in Maryland who had that same exact issue. They wanted to buy Exadata, a lot of Exadata, Oracle Exadata, which is, I don't want to go into it, but it's an expensive piece of equipment, and they wanted us to run it, and they wanted to do all these other things, and it was a massive bill that they were looking at, and their budget said, no way, we can't do it. So what do you do? I mean, I think in the end, it boils down to the SLA. If you have a vendor that says, hey, look, I can move this application of yours into the cloud, and I can put an SLA around it, and I can provide security and compliance and privacy, governance, and you know, you don't ever have to worry about anything except, you know, how is this thing running and do I need to customize it? Then an SLA really is, you know, a hard SLA in that contract is critical. And I'm probably not telling you anything, but that's how we handled it.
Yeah. And I think it also goes back to the partnership with the business, what I talked about earlier. I mean, if you truly have a partnership with the business that's driving whatever that SLA may be, then they understand the trade-offs, and then you're making those choices and those decisions based on the business and the business requirements.
Yeah, I worked at Booz Allen a couple of years ago, and I had a customer who bought a lot of Oracle gear, and it was really top-end gear. And they were extremely unhappy about the performance they had out of it. Well, once it became clear what the gear was and how they were using it, it was obvious why. They used the right gear for the wrong purpose, right? And so I think that the trade-off between having things on-premise and, you know, you can either have your computers delivered in boxes, go through the process of uncrating the boxes, figuring out, you know, where the power goes, do you have enough power, are you going to be able to cool the thing, right? And go through all that physical thing about having gear, to going to the agility of just swiping your credit card virtually and using Amazon or some other providers' cloud services, and then being able to turn off that relationship, right? So I think that it's quite clear that we'll continue to have terrestrial computers in your office for certain purposes, and some customers won't be able to get away from them because the density of computing and the kind of things that they need to do are best done in their data center, versus using, you know, the convenience and the ubiquity of cloud solutions and the flexibility that you get with that. Also, the other thing is, we talked about that before, is that, you know, really you have to ask yourself the question, where's the meter? There are different dials, different meters, right? Where's your IT staff? Do you really need that IT staff, right? And for most of us, we don't. We really don't. And we have the choice today to get rid of, what, $4 out of $5? Right? So I think that, yeah.
Right. I just wanted to make a point. So if you look at the model that Amazon and Google did, right, because they were looking at the same problem, right, they rolled their own reference architecture. You know, so if you're looking at architecturally, they're just using off-the-shelf cheap components, building it into, if it breaks, you throw it out and you put something else there, and it fixes itself by the software wrapper that they put it around.
So you can roll your own reference architecture and get the best of both if you need to.
And you can't do that in your own infrastructure right. without right. suffering egregious costs.
Last chance. Anyone with one last question for the panel?
Someone, you know, in healthcare saying, well, we can't do that when we have an emergency and the weather, you know, keeps us from accessing, you know, the servers. Are there any alternative routes like a satellite, you know, signal or something like that, that can make up for?
We don't have web access, yeah.
Absolutely, and I think it's the same thing. It doesn't, the fact that you're using these phenomenal back-end capabilities, whether or not they're in a data center that's off-site from the hospital or in a public cloud, right, that's devoted to managing your healthcare. And I'm not even sure that this is done today, but whatever the case, you face the same issues. It's the backhoe, right, which digs up the connectivity to on either end of the equation, yeah. right, either end. And so the networking is just one aspect of it. Today it's egregious to have any kind of infrastructure on either the consuming or the providing end, where you don't provide multiple paths for data, power, and everything. It's just egregious.
So we're hosting the supply chain for North Shore Long Island Jewish Hospital, which has 22 or so hospitals in the New York area. So obviously supply chain in the hospital environment means that, you know, we take a data dump, or we analyze that data at 5 a.m. in the morning, and by 10 a.m. in the morning for North Shore, they've got to be sending out POs to buy the equipment or the products or whatever they're using in that emergency room or in that operating room, that ER. So that system is mission critical. We're able to run that. I think there's other vendors, IBM, Dell, you name it. I mean, they're competitors of ours, but this, you know, the vision of cloud is real. I mean, healthcare companies, government companies are heavily invested in healthcare today, or I'm sorry, cloud today. So I heard that objection too, and I somewhat agree with it, depending upon what application he's talking about, but we are able to run mission critical applications that really drive the day in, the minute by minute critical applications of hospitals today. So,
okay, let's close with one last one. It's kind of a combination of stuff we might have talked about, but let's just go down, starting with Blake. Just go down and for either healthcare or government, be a visionary here and tell us in the next year what's the most one significant thing that we're actually going to get done. There's a lot of activity going on. There's no question about it. A lot of talking about moving to the cloud, a lot of actual work in the cloud, but what will be different? What will be accomplished in the next year that will be the most significant?
Can I think about that one for a few minutes? Does someone else want to jump in on that?
I think you're seeing OpenStack is going to become a true cloud OS that is enterprise hardened. I think with the latest release, we're there. Within a year, I think you're going to see large adoption, just like you saw Linux adoption when Linux first came out. Think about what the data center OSs were. You had Solaris, you had AIX, you had all these, and now really you have Microsoft and Linux for the most part that have the market share. You're going to see that same thing starting to happen with cloud OSs.
Well, it's actually being shipped with Solaris now, the latest release. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that you're going to see from an OS perspective, the OS vendors are going to actually have everything built in. Number one, they're going that way. Linux containers are starting to take off, right? So it's going to get cheaper in the long run. But I think the biggest piece is going to be security, right? Because right now there's a lack of trust. That's one of the roadblocks of people moving to cloud. And I think there's a lot of effort going on to fix that from a security perspective. And until that's done, and I think it'll probably be by next year, perhaps, I think cloud will explode.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not that optimistic about the pace of 1 year. I think
have faith.
While I'm a security guy, I have lost my faith.
Oh, no.
I have lots of evidence that we would all agree with, I think. But I think that, certainly some of the aspects of what you said, I think the operating system vendors absolutely have been sedimenting different functionality. Mm-hmm. You don't buy a firewall today. It's part of your operating system, and it's been the case for the last 3 years for pretty much all operating systems. The first one happened about 8 years ago. So sedimenting functionality down into systems and platforms. And the same thing is true for hardware. I mean, if you think about it, the mobile device management companies, Good and AirWatch and so forth, their functionality is probably short-lived. As the device vendors implement the hardware, and BlackBerry did that with, it's probably not the best example. they're still alive, right?
Barely.
But they're still alive. BlackBerry did that with their OS, allowing you to have two sides to the same device, right, for personal use or for corporate use. So this all this functionality being sedimented down into devices at a lower and lower level, down into the hardware, I think that's really taking off. Within a year, not so sure, but the trends are certainly moving in that direction. So I think the best you can say about predicting is that there will be some of the players that you depend on today won't be around, and there'll be a host of brand new ones. And so being open to innovation coming from places where you wouldn't expect it to come from, it's not really coming from Oracle, it's not really coming from the big vendors, it's coming from little places that end up being acquired.
Right. Good setup for Drew.
I was just about to say I agree with you until that last statement. I do agree with the fact that over the next 12-month period, we are, innovation will continue to happen and things will change. But where I think we'll see improvement from the service providers is a move towards standards which allow us to deliver these mission-critical applications in the cloud such that it's in a standard model where it's easy to adopt and it minimizes any risk and any issues going forward during the production phase. So.
Fair enough. So you want Chris's answer, right?
Well, no. I like Chris and Vic's answer, but I've been in the security world for a while, and I have times when I'm quite jaded, too, about sort of the things that we're seeing nowadays. But at least when I look at some of the healthcare companies that we've been dealing with, and they're standing up a private clouds as a way of providing electronic health record systems to physician offices and that sort of thing. Certainly, they've been talking for years now about, they can't go to the public cloud. Can they go to the public cloud? We're testing to see if we can go on the public cloud. And I suspect that we'll see that coming from many of them soon. Yeah. So.
Okay, thank you. Well, we made it. Thank you to our panelists. Thank you, everybody, for hanging in there. Thank you to all of our sponsors. And just a plug for our next time to get together with a joint DC.